there's already some heated conversations before this very, I guess, hot topic, of course, and a lot to say about this. Admittingly, I don't know much about the baseball rules, nor much about the Choshen Mishpat rules, but I'll take an attempt to plunge into this world. Obviously, this is very theoretical. Had this been a real Beis Din, I would not be sitting here at the front judging the case, but I thought it would be a nice little food for thought to go through this topic of the Houston Astros and the sign stealing. Really just as a continuation from the Drasha on Shabbos, those who are here know I'm talking about, those who are not here, just the element of how Parshas Mishpatim is something very relevant to us. Even though when we get to Parshas Mishpatim, we feel that it's so far, and it's for those people learning in Kolel, it's Baba Kamas, Baba Metzias, Baba Basras, and for the regular person going to work, it means nothing to them. It's the complete opposite, because Mishpatim has everything to do with what people are doing in the real world, whether it be in law or medicine or accounting. Mishpatim is really the framework of everything we do in business. So I was just posing the question of what people's views were on Houston Astros. Did anyone think what the Torah would suggest, what they would, the Torah and the Beis Din would paskin with regards to the Houston Astros sign stealing? I'm assuming everyone here knows what took place. There were some women after Drasha who said they had no idea what I was talking about with Houston Astros. I spoke to Rav last week just getting his thoughts. I said, are you familiar with the Houston Astros? He said, of course I'm familiar with what's going on. So a lot of the Rosh Yeshiva are familiar with what's going on. So, all right, this is not a women's shir. So I'm assuming all the men know exactly what's going on. And the question is, how would the Torah view this case? And one of the things we have to talk about is we're going to assume just for now that everyone's Jewish involved. Because once you get involved in Goyim, things get a little bit more complicated. So just a few, you know, the Houston Astros, I think my son said Bregman is Jewish maybe, right? He could be even Jewish? Okay. So some of the players are actually Jewish, so let's assume the MLB is all Jewish, and just to make it a little bit smoother for today's conversation. So the question is, did they do anything wrong? If they did, what did they do wrong? And is there any payment, retribution that they would have to owe to various parties involved? So let's go through one by one. Did they do anything wrong? So I did not check the MLB rule book. From what my understanding is, it might be people are going to call out. Let's just keep to my understanding for now. You could correct me afterwards. But unless Mikey, I'll allow Mikey to correct me because he's been a Bucky for many years. But the in terms of the MLB rules, for what I'm told, is that there is no rule explicit in the rule book that you can't steal signs. You know, it's known already. The second base, the person on second base looks at the signs. He sends things back to the dugout. Sign stealing is part of the game, but the use of technology is not part of the game. Someone referred me to a YouTube video where you could see a very easy way to steal signs using some type of mechanism. So it's available to any team that wants to. The question is, are they willing to? And Houston Astros, to our knowledge, is the only organization that actually used this form of technology. Is that considered breaking the rules or not? Is that considered lying? Is that considered cheating? So the understanding is that there's something called Dina de Malchus Adina. Dina de Malchus Adina is when it applies to government rules. And things that are written in terms of a rule book, certain things you have to follow in law and medicine and in accounting and real estate. But there's also, within the world of Dina de Malchus Adina, there's something called Minhagim. Every industry has this certain unwritten rules, the way the Minhag is, the way it's understood. Real estate, for example, if you showed a client a house and then, 2 years later, they buy that house from a different realtor, can the first realtor claim rights that I showed it to you first? So sometimes these are written in certain documents, and sometimes they're not. But there's a certain understanding that, let's say, 6 months is how much time you have to hold on to that client. If that client buys the house 6 months afterwards, so then you're free. You don't have to pay the fee to the initial realtor. So I'm not saying that's the rule by realtors, but every industry, even that which is not written, there are unwritten rules as part of the minhagim, the practice that's understood. So the industry of baseball, it's been understood that one does not use technology of any sort to steal the signs. So seemingly that would be considered breaking the rules. Now, let's say it's not considered breaking the rules, but still there's more to it. So if you take a look at this first tshuva of Rav Moshe, Rav Moshe is talking about a different case. Obviously, he wasn't talking about the Houston Astros stealing signs. When it comes to the world of Choshen Mishpat, as I mentioned on Shabbos, that Rabbi Yishmael writes in the Mishnah, a person wants to be a chacham, he should be Yasuk B'dini Mamanus. He should be Osik in the world of Dini Mamanus and Choshen Mishpat. Because Choshen Mishpat is a much harder area of Torah than any other area. You know, when it comes to Chelek Or HaChaim, so the, once you know Or HaChaim well, there are not that many new shilas that come up. Zman Shema, Zman Tefillah, new things come up, but everything for the most part is found in Shulchan Aruch and Mishnah Berurah. Yerdeya, milk falling into meat, mixing two meats together, most of everything's found in Shulchan Aruch. Chosha Mishpat, you're going to have cases all the time. You have some lawyers here who've been to court. How you're not going to find the same case over and over again. You will, but more often than not, the case will be different. And the way to figure out what the rules are, you have to be Madama Milsa Milsa. Try to figure out, it's similar to that case that the Nodu Yehuda spoke about. It's somewhat similar to the case the Chassam Sofer spoke about. And trying to connect dots as best as possible, that's what makes Chosha Mishpat so challenging. But when you learn it well, it leads you to a world, a depth of knowledge like no other area of Torah. That's what Rabbi Shmuel says. So this case where Moshe is talking about, try to keep in mind how all these different factors would apply to the case of the Houston Ashkenaz. He's describing Bachrim and Yeshiva stealing the regents, whether that's allowed. So look inside number one. Be'iser genevas tshuvas l'she'elo, stealing the answers to the questions, to the tests, mi'b'chinei ha'siyam she'osim ha'medina, the end-of-year test, the exit exam, or hinei bedavar she'alta she'elaso amash shama, that which you heard, the yeshivos are matirin le'atamidim, that the yeshiva is allowing them, they're saying, listen, you're not allowed to go in there, but we're not locking the door. So that which you heard, that you allow the tamidim lignoves atshuvos la'ashelos, that you leave the door open to let the bachim steal the answers, b'mabcheis ha'siyim she'ose b'medina, which he says is regents, in parentheses, regents, k'dei lahonos lakaba esatudos shegamru b'tov, this way they could get their diplomas and passing marks. So is that allowed? And Rav Moshe writes, "Hinei davar zeh aser, it's prohibited. Lo rak midina de malchusa, not only because it goes against the rules of the government. Ela midin Torah, midaraisa. There's a violation. What's the violation? Ve'ein zerak gnevas das. It's not only stealing someone's das; it's tricking someone, which is also gamkein aser. That's also aser midaraisa. Kedamar Shmuel bechulin she'aser lignov das abrios. You can't steal the mind of people. You can't trick people. Afilu ledaito shel akum. Even a goy, it's aser to trick him." The kol shekein hacha, certainly here, shu gnevas das l'chuliyah ma'af l'yiso, you're tricking everyone in the world, el hu gam gnevas davar mamish. So it's not only a violation against the government, it's not only a violation of gnevas das, but it's even considered actual gnevas, stealing something. What's it stealing? Deha kishe yirtze l'parnasaso, when he wants to get a parnasa, b'meshach zman, when he graduates from yeshiva and college maybe, l'haschi atzmo, to hire himself out, Eitel echad la'avod ba'asakav, he goes to the potential employer. V'rotzim b'rov ha'pamim b'misha gamar heitev, they want a person with a good GPA, a guy who passed the score, high scores in SATs. So, limudav, the chol, they want to see he's very good in secular subjects. V'huyirlo, he says, I got a 1600. Here's the tudor, here's the passing, here's the grade. Eich shegamar b'tov, v'al smach zeh, based on this, these grades, Kiblu, he accepts him as a employee. Shizel gnevas mamun mamish. You are stealing the money of the employer. So just to put it in connection to the Houston Ashes for a second here. So what are the problems? What would the Isurim be involved that the Houston Ashes were involved in? One is what we're describing here, lying and stealing. But there's also stealing money. Because there's a certain pot, I don't know the number, but the team that wins the World Series, they win cash. Now, that cash, I don't think can match to what their salaries are for a number of these players, but it's money. It's money to the organization, and perhaps they give it out to each player. I don't know how it gets split, but there's money that was stolen by the Astros. So that's also Gnevas Mamish. So that's one element. So
other opposing team pitches.
We'll get there. So then it says, so this is stealing money right now from MLB. So now, v'ein lo liton, don't claim v'lomar she'af im kiblu la'avod etzlo, adaiti d'hachi, hu k'makbid al davar she'no tzarech. You know what you could say? Who cares? These SAT scores don't make a difference. The employer wants to have good SAT scores? That's an unreasonable reason to hire me. He should hire me because I'm a good guy. So the fact that he wants my SAT scores, that makes no sense. So since he's making no sense, I can lie on my scores. Don't say that. Chada. Even if it's true that he shouldn't care about your SAT scores, well, vade kapeda balab kablaso. He is able to be makbid on it. You're right. In the world, my SAT score should have no bearing on my job. Maybe. But he cares about it. So just because I don't think it makes a difference, to him it makes a difference. So moreover,
they split 30 million.
V'gam she'aser l'shaker b'chol ofen. You also can't lie. Just lying alone is aser. Af she'eino nogei l'shum davar. Even if there's no result from it, there's no to'elus. Deinu me'atlas mili d'rashai l'shanos. The Gemara b'metziah says there are only three items that you can lie about. Stealing tests is not one of the items you can lie about. V'gam im yado shu m'shaker. Let's say he knows. He knows you're lying. He's not going to rely on you. He's not going to, you know, trust you. V'yigrom, this is perhaps the worst thing. V'yigrom sheyachshor la'acher, he's going to be choshed another from Jew. K'sheyichshor eitz davar, d'oso lo yachshor machmas shalamar b'yeshiva. Ah, that guy went to the yeshiva? I know guys who go to yeshiva. I met one before. He lied. He lied about his SAT score. So now it's going to be a terrible chil Hashem. It's going to prevent other people from getting jobs. I'll hire some other guy who's a yasha person. A guy with a yarmulke on. I don't trust these people anymore. But the guy didn't do anything wrong. So had he known the guy was a trustworthy guy, he wouldn't fire the other guy or not hire the other guy. So the first element here, is there any stealing taking place when it comes to the Asher? So certainly lying took place. Certainly Gnevas Das, they're tricking people, took place. And then I believe there's even Gnevas Mammon, they actually stole the pot of the World Series. Yeah.
I just have one question, Rabbi Levin. Just to add to that, the way that the share comes from the MLB, it comes in a lump sum, mm-hmm. and the players vote shares to different people. So potentially there were people on the Astros that had no idea what was going on with the sign stealing. And they got that money from Geneva, but they were not guilty parties, but they were part. Are they as
right?
Are they as guilty as those who
right? So, know, right.
Who lied the same way? Who right. were the masterminds? Or who,
right. So I would say, to my understanding, that again, there could be. I don't know all the information. I believe that the whole team was aware of it. They just didn't want to take part in it, and certainly the pitchers didn't affect the pitchers unless they were playing against a National League team. And but that wasn't at home anyway, so they didn't have the means. So anyways, but you can only win as a team. So even though a few players may not have been involved, without the other ones cheating, you are still benefiting from that. So I believe that there is an element of stealing. Now the problem becomes, how do you evaluate how much to spend to who's going to win? So let's say you knock the Astros out. So who do they steal from? They didn't steal from the Dodgers necessarily, because it could have been the Yankees that won. The Yankees who they defeated in the previous round. So who did they steal from? So it's unclear. So it's unclear who should get paid that money. But it sounds like there's really stealing. Maybe what should happen is that the MLB should take that $30 million and they should divide it in some way to the Dodgers and the Yankees. I don't know, 50-50, or maybe since the Dodgers made it, and the Yankees were still a svek-sveko, so maybe the Dodgers get 75% and the Yankees get 25% and split. Who knows? But it sounds like there is some level of stealing that takes place, but from a pot that is not owned by anyone. No one actually owns it. So one model that I thought of similar to this, but it's not exactly the same. Let's say I separated Truma. And I want to give Truma to Cohen. We have Spergel and Ezra here, and I could divide it to any other Cohen. I'm here, those two Cohen. I could give to either one. Now, I didn't separate Shmuel or to Ezra. I just put Truma here. I'm going to give it to someone, whoever I like better. Whoever treats me nicer, I'll give it to that Cohen. So I set it aside. Now, let's say Reuven comes along and steals that Truma. So now he owes money. Who does he owe the money to? So now the pot was available for anyone who won the World Series. So now it was stolen by the Astros. They're the gun of him. But who did they steal from? No one owned it. No one actually won it yet. So the din is that when Reuven steals the truma from me, it comes back to me as the Ba'al Bayis because I have the decision to make who to give it to. So using that model, it would seem that the money should go back to the MLB, who are the owners of it. And they should decide, based on whatever valuation, who they think should win, whether it be the Yankees, or perhaps whoever the Astros beat in their round previous to them, I don't know who that was, or the Dodgers, and some assessment of that. That's how I believe approach may be in terms of Beis Din. Now, there is another factor here, which Moshe brought up here, that what about the pitchers who lost their jobs? A few pitchers, supposedly, you know, their ERAs blew up. they couldn't get an out. Their ERA went to like 21 point something. So they lost their jobs, were sent down to the minors, and that they ruined their career, they ruined their confidence, and they got ruined. Can those individuals claim a lawsuit against the Astros for losing their money? Is there damage to be claimed on those pitchers?
They actually have brought lawsuits.
I'm saying so halachically. So halachically, can they claim any money because damage was caused? There was nezek. They lost their jobs, or they got demoted, or their contracts went lower. They were not given renewed contracts. What would the halacha be in terms of the nezek caused by the Astros?
Is that indirectly?
So we have to figure out what's indirect. So the question is grumma. There's something called grumma, and there's something called garmi. So we have to define what's the difference between grumma and garmi. There's different levels of indirect damage. But before we get to the definitions of indirect damages, let's get to an interesting, I'm going to go backwards in the Maamar Kol, an interesting Pischei Tshuva number 4 in the backside. The Pischei Tshuva, we'll read it together. It says, Ayin Ber Hetev, just jump down to the second line, B'maise B'ruvin, Shoyachayv L'Shimon, Elef, I'm not sure what currency that is, B'Ksav Yado Im Nemanis. Ruvin had committed himself to pay $1,000, used dollars to make it easy, committed himself $1,000 to pay back Shimon. U'b'shnas taf memtes, shepashtu chayal hamelech tzarfas, the French army, Bashkas came to attack Germany. Ve'chrivu kvarm, they were destroying villages. Ve'shalu bazu yenos v'truos, were taking wine and grains and stealing from everyone. So Mile Ruven, who again owed the money, Mile Ruven svina b'yeno shalanu, he packed his boat with wine. U'bikesh lahavricham l'marachok, shlotagia sham yadasone, he wanted to avoid the French army. So he put on a boat and was going somewhere. Vinoda de Shimon was aware that Ruven's trying to escape, and he knows Shimon owes him $1,000. So Shimon got word of this. V'ikel hasvina aide asrara, he was able to have the police or someone hold the boat back, not let them leave the port. Ad sheyifala Ruven, until Ruven agreed to pay him $1,000, and otherwise he wouldn't let him go. Oh, shiyamu lo ariv maspik, or at least to give him a reliable cosigner to have him paid back. The boat remained there. The boat was anchored to the port. The French army made its way to the port. The sarfuair, they burnt the city. The shalu asher matzu v'gam svina haniskares. They mentioned they burnt all the boats, including Ruvain's boat, with all the wine that was worth $1,000 that he owed. So now, whenever they made their way to Bezdin, Shimon says that Ruven owes me $1,000. So what's Ruven's response? Heshiv Ruven, Ruven says, Ki garm lo hezek, he caused damage to me. I would have been free, my boat would have went to Holland, and would have been safe. And instead, he held my boat back, and he was grumma, he caused damage to my property. That's grumma. Shelule she'ikal svinosa, had he not held my boat back, I would have went to Holland. Visham hayamocher yena, I could have sold the wine, bought elef rav, $1,000 kesef chovo. I would have paid him back. But he is mousing my property, so now he owes me money. Or at least we could call it equal. So cause of the dayanim paskin, denira she'ein tainis Ruvain klum. Ruvain's claim is worthless. Ki ein lechayv es Shimon mitzad dina de garmi. Dina de garmi, we'll get to again. We haven't used the terms yet. But dina de garmi is a type of indirect damage that one would owe money. So even though normally dina de garmi, a person would be chayv to pay in that type of indirect damage, here is different. The kvar hichriya shach, the shach already concluded, the dina de garmi hu rak knas midrabanim, really you don't have to pay for indirect damages. But Chachamim felt they wanted to penalize those who cause indirect damage. However, it was done b'shogeg shlonis kavin lehezek pater. If it was done for some other reason, your intent wasn't to damage that your potter. What does that mean? Look what he says. Hare Khan, Masha Asa Shimon, that what Shimon did, he wasn't intending on damaging his property. He just wanted his money back. He didn't want Ruvain's boat to be burned. He wasn't Kavana Lahazik. Lobin Mazin Asa, Rak Lahazik Chava. He wanted to collect his money. Ubifrat, and according to us, he goes a little bit further, but based on this, the Pischei Tshuva says, when your Kavana is not to damage, you're not chayav to pay. No, Shimon damaged. Shimon held back Ruvain's boat. And that caused... Ruvain owed money to Shimon. And Shimon held back the boat. So Shimon caused the damage to Ruvain. So the din is, even though normally by Dina the Garmi types of indirect damage, you owe money, But that's only true when you intended on damaging. Here, he did not intend on damaging. He just wanted to get his money back. And happens to be, there was some nezek that took place. And therefore, he'd be potter. Now, given this case, the Houston Astros, they did not intend on damaging. They did not intend on having these pitchers lose their jobs. Their intent was to win the World Series, to get this piece of metal, right? Or to get the cash winnings, but not to be mazik. So according to this understanding, even if it were to be Dina de Garmi, it wouldn't be chayv according to this Pischei Tshuva.
That would not be in Psikresha, I guess?
Psikresha wouldn't be affected by this. We'll have to get to the definitions of Grama Garmi, but right now the focus is Kavana. There's no Kavana Lahazik. According to Pischei Tshuva, when there's no Kavana Lahazik, then there's no payment of damages.
But the fact that he wanted the boat to not to leave, isn't that... That's no damage?
No.
What was the purpose of having the boat?
He wanted the money. He wanted to have an insurance. He's going to get paid. I didn't want it to get damaged. He wanted to get the money. He didn't want to damage his property. He wants his money. So, that being...
The damage has to be there. In other words, they can't win unless they take advantage.
Unless somebody loses.
It has to be. It's not...
No. No, because the damage here, you could still win without a guy losing his job. If it's a good game, it's a fair game, the pitcher won't lose his job. Your Kavana... Yeah.
No, because as a matter, it has to be that you're hitting off that pitcher, which means that the negative
has to happen
yeah,
but
for you to win.
In the end of the day, but that wasn't his Kavana. And at the same
time,
his Kavana wasn't the damage. He may have been aware of it. But if you asked them, if you really asked them, you had a lie detector test to all the players there, the organization, do you want to make this guy lose his job? They would say, no, I want to win the World Series. Happens to be there's going to be some...
But you're making the distinction where there is none. In other words, I don't want to hurt this pitcher. I just want to hit home runs off him every time I get up. It's the same thing. Professionally, you can't damage him without hitting the home runs.
No, but you could still... Many teams have lost the World Series and have not lost jobs. They still did good. They didn't make it. So they have to damage this guy in a serious way. But I think it's a fair distinction in that, in the case of the boat... You weren't sure that the nezek would come, but it was somewhat inevitable. The French were taking over Germany.
But the difference with the boat is he could have given him $1,000 of wine in lieu of payment, and he could have left the port. He could have paid him whatever he wanted. That was up to Reuven. The damage was Reuven. If he was being stubborn by not paying, that's on him. But here the pitcher...
Okay, it's a fair distinction. Fair enough.
It's direct damage. I think what Shmuley's saying is also like you have insider trading. So somebody who has knowledge that somebody else doesn't have, he sells his stock at a high price. He's selling it to somebody. That person is obviously going to lose. There's a winner and a loser on both sides of the equation. It can only be you gain by somebody else losing. Uh-huh.
But he doesn't know the other person.
What's that?
Okay. So it's a fair point. Okay, so the point that they're saying here is that some type of damage, some type of winnings will... inevitably create losers that are being damaged, which is not quite like this particular case here, where there's you could still win without having the guy lose his boat had he given in. Okay, fair point.
But even if you steal this sign, doesn't mean you're going to hit a home run.
I know for me and you that's not the case, but I can't even get like wood on the bat. But apparently, I'm also shocked. I'm trying to think. Could it change up if it's a fastball that'll make them hit a home run? Well, apparently, yes. Like, who went to home run after Chapman in the ninth inning, they say? So I don't really know, but it certainly put them over. Stanton said he'd hit over 80 home runs had he been aware of this. So,
they also said, if you know what's coming, it makes it much easier.
Yeah,
they said the difference between a home run or a sharply hit ball is like a 16th of an inch on the baseball.
All right, so, okay.
That
okay, so now let's go for, yeah. Yeah, let's go to the next step now. So even in this world, so again, I think all very good points, how this case of Kavana might be different with the World Series, like the inside trading versus the boat case. But that being said, there is another idea of the Shulchan Aruch that even when a person has no Kavana to damage, there is sometimes still responsibility. This might be more like what you guys are suggesting. There is a halach in the Mishabru, rather in the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, that let's say a chassan and kala get engaged. And the chassan puts in a lot of money, the family puts in a lot of money to prepare for the wedding. And then last minute, the kala pulls out. And it's too late to save the money. The wedding hall, the caterer, thousands of dollars spent. And there's no way to make it back. So her kavana was not to damage. Her kavana was she went out, she fell in love with someone else, she was nervous, she had cold feet. Whatever it was, there's no kavana to damage. She just didn't want to marry this guy anymore. the Shulchan Aruch paskins that she has to pay anyways, even though there's no kavanah to be mazik. Why? So the Gra says, even though there was no kavanah, barushe hakala lo his kavanah lahazik, but she was still posheya. She was still negligent. So when there's negligence involved, even without kavanah lahazik, that also carries a certain responsibility. So certainly in the case of the Houston Astros, where there is negligence, in the case of the inside trading, where there's negligence, even though you didn't have kavanah to damage the other parties, you were aware of it, when there's pshia, there's a responsibility of paying indirect damages as well.
What if she finds out he was a crook and she gets out for that?
So each case is different. So if there's a reason, so there's a different reason. If she finds out, but the case right now is talking Stam, she pulled out for...
I just said.
So if she changed around for a good reason, that's not poshea. If it's poshe, where it's complete negligence, it wouldn't be.
Cases. In the case of the Kala, she gets nervous and she runs away. The Astros had intent to, not intent to damage the picture, but there was intent to deceive. In the Kala's case,
yeah.
She says,
But at the end of the day, she caused monetary damage to this guy.
I understand that, but I'm saying that the Astros, the cheating...
So how, it's a Kala Homer then.
As
I said. Yeah. So I said, if this lady is responsible to pay, she had no kavanah of mazik. Yeah, that's what I said. No, they're not saying that. You can get excited about it. It's a good topic, though.
So,
yeah. So it seems that they would be responsible to pay damage because they're posheya. But now we have to figure out what is considered direct and indirect damage. So there is a... this I mentioned before. I'm not going to go through the story because I think I shared it with you recently. About the time I was in getting the bechina for the Kol Elyon, the Rav Shechter, he was going to ask me this question and about to, crush me. And then a guy came, interrupted. He had a phone call outside. He saved me. So he was about to ask me this question of what the difference between Grum and Garmi is. That was the question. And I was going to answer that I know there's a Tosos and Ramban, but I didn't know what the different explanations were. But I was saved by the bell. So, but now we could discuss together, what is the difference between grumma and garmi? There are a number of gemaras throughout Shas where sometimes grumma, indirect damage, the gemara says you're pater, you don't pay damage. And there are many other gemaras that say when you're indirectly damaged, someone, you're chayv to pay. So all the Yishomim try to figure out, well, when are you chayv and when are you pater? What's the difference? So if you look now, we'll go through a few different sheets. If you look at the second page still, the top, it's a tosos. I cut out all the tosos. The previous page has all the gemaras. You can look through if you want. But in this next page here, in the top line, in the bold, where it says, V'chilku Rabbeinu. Rabbeinu Yitzhak made the following distinction. He says, Lashon Acher, Dina Degarmi. Dina Degarmi is the term they use that you're chayiv. Grama is the term they use that you're pater. How does one define Dina Degarmi when you're chayiv? That's Hainu She'osa Hu Atzmo Hezek Limamon Chavero. It's when a person himself is doing the damage. When he's directly involved in the damage, as opposed to someone else doing this. So, I'll give you an example. It just came up because Friday night I spoke about this. If a son is a doctor, if he could draw blood from the father. So we said it's a problem of drawing blood, but maybe there's a heter. But if Tzvi Pesach Frank talks about a weird case to us, putting a leech on your father. Now, a leech would draw blood. So it's in the way of Hakasas Dam, to draw blood out. And we don't do that anymore, obviously. But could a son put a leech on a father?
Indirect.
So the halacha is that it would be indirect, and therefore, since it's not you yourself, you're putting something there, that leech, to draw the blood, you would not be responsible. So if you yourself are not doing the damage, you're pater. If you are doing the damage, then you're chayv. So that's a distinction if you're doing it or you're causing someone else. There's a middleman or some other tool or mechanism to create that damage. That's the understanding of Rabbeinu Yitzhak. Yourself versus a middle party. Don't think about it. It's in many cases. It's going to get very confused. Just stay focused right now on the definitions for now. V'od, od chilek dedina degarmi. Another explanation is, chayv hainu mishas maisa sheba hezek. It's a question of timing. When I, cause damage, I break your window with my rock, that damage happens immediately. But let's say it's a slow process. Let's say, I light a fire here, and there's no damage, but eventually it's going to make its way over to your car. That's going to take some time. That will be pater. It's a question of timing. So the first chiluk is, I'm doing it versus having a middle party, Or is it happening immediately, or is it going to be delayed? This is just another model for this. In Hilchas Shabbos, for example, we know Grumma, when it comes to Grumma on Shabbos, there are certain heterim on Grumma. So when I open my refrigerator, so hot air is coming into my refrigerator. To keep the temperature down, the motor is going to turn on. But that doesn't turn on immediately. That's delayed. That's called Grumma. So Grumma is always when it's delayed. That's according to the second definition. The third definition is the Ritba. The Ritba, quoted in the Tosis as well, he says, Niralit Ritba, didina degarmi habi mitam knas, it's when there's a penalty, k'demuchach b'yushalmi, v'lachach kol hezek ham namatsoi v'rogi lavo kansu chachamim. Whenever there's something that's common, so then they impose a penalty. But kansu shaloye kolechad holech ma'adik l'chaver ba'avon, ba'ayin, ben. Meaning the whole idea, the whole motivation, the whole impetus for creating damage, paying damage for Grumma and Garmi, we don't want people to do it. So you could circumvent halacha. It's only indirect damage. Well, once I have a certain loophole, so everyone's going to start damaging in this way. Right. So they said, we have to make a penalty that anyone who damages in this way, since it's frequent, we're going to penalize them with money. So if it's a common type of damage, we don't care how indirect, then it's going to be chayiv. If it's uncommon, so then we won't apply a punishment. It's like what they have in the Gemara when it comes to milsa de lo shchicha lo gazrinam. We have gezeras. But Chacham were not gozer in infrequent cases. Things that happen very rarely, they didn't impose a gezera. So this gezera of penalties for grama garmi was only imposed when it's frequent, but when it's infrequent, they did not impose the gezera. That's the difference between grama and garmi according to the Ritzba. There's a few more. We'll do one more, the Ramban, because the Ramban has a sefer called Dina de Garmi. It's a whole sefer trying to talk about this topic, what's Dina de Garmi? And he concludes that Dina de Garmi is whether or not the Nezek will be Bari Hazeka or Lo Bari, which means sometimes you'll do something and may result in damage, and sometimes it may not result in damage. So let's say the Houston Astros case. The Shmuley was suggesting that they knew for sure that this pitcher is going to do bad because I know a changeup's coming, so I'm going to knock it over the fence. That, to me, won't be Bar Hezekah. It's possible you might hit the home run, and he might get a bad ERA, or maybe he won't get a bad ERA. Ramban says the only time one's responsible for indirect damage is if it's Bar Hezekah. The Hezek is definitely going to come. If there's some level of Suffolk, how you define the Suffolk, not for now. If there's some level of Suffolk, that's not Dina de Garmi, and one would be Pater. So these are four of maybe six different definitions of a Grumma Garmi. I don't expect you to remember this. But how do we pass it? What's the bottom line of the definition of Grumma Garmi? So if Asher Weiss, in his Chelek Rishon of Shelis V'Tshuvos, he has a simon that he dedicates to this topic, and he concludes, based on many, many rayas, that the halacha passing is like the shita of the Ritzba, which is that if it's common, there's a responsibility to pay for Grumma Garmi. If it's uncommon, then there would not be any requirement to pay for the indirect damage. That's his understanding. So now coming back to the Houston Astros. So they, you know, they blew this pitcher's ERA up to the who knows what, and he lost the job. He was demoted to the minors, and he got a worse contract. Is this Dina de Garmi or Dina de is it Grumma? Is it Grumma that they did the wrong thing? I'm not saying what they did was right. I'm just wondering, would Bezdin require them to pay for that guy's contract that he lost? So if it's something that's common, so then they'd be responsible. But since it's uncommon, it would appear to be that they would be putter from paying any damages because it's not common that teams are doing this. Now, it's very possible that once they saw Houston Astros did this, so now maybe the other teams will start doing this as well, and maybe it will become common. But my understanding will be that the MLB will have new rules, and they're going to have new ways to ensure, to police each of the organizations and stadiums to ensure that this won't happen. So in my opinion, I don't think there would be a need to make a penalty in this case. They're already going to be putting up the right circumstances, right situations to ensure that this won't ever happen again. And for that reason, for that matter, since this was just a one-time instance, we believe, I don't think they'd be responsible for paying for the indirect damage. That's just, again, my humble opinion. I didn't speak to the Yadim who know Chosha Mishpa well. I didn't speak to people who know MLB well, but certainly a good food for thought, which, again, my overall message is that we should try to be looking what we see in the real world, whether it be in sports, whether it be in everyday life and business, how halacha has an opinion. He has an opinion how we should look at things. And I'm very happy that after, you know, Shabbos, a few people came up to me to say that we should have a shiur on how to write halachic wills, because people don't have proper halachic wills, and how to do it, both in the theory and the practice, among other suggestions along the way. That's my goal with this shiur, and Mirza Hashem will continue tomorrow.
So why is that next week.